You're listening to Inside the Village, where all news is local and no topic is off limits.
So help me, Bob, it's Bully in the Alley.
Back for another episode of Inside the Village for the week of November the 23rd, 2023. Executive producer Derek Turner is in the room. As always, Michael Friscalanti, editor-in-chief. I'm Scott Sexsmith. Great to have the crew back. Okay, it was a week or so ago since your time with the Prime Minister. Frankly, it's all we've heard. But now, your incredible journalistic skills have traveled as far as the West Coast. And the story got picked up by an online news organization there, just applauding your efforts.
What was funny about it, Mark Edge, a journalist out there, great piece for CanadianDimension.com, just wrote about my interview with Trudeau and specifically about Bill C-18 and the Online News Act. Obviously, Mark's not a huge fan of the Online News Act.
Right.
And his lead was something along the lines of sometimes it takes a small town journalist to rip the prime minister. So I've clearly graduated from a nobody to a small town journalist. So I'm very excited about that. It's a big moment.
Well, clearly Mark and great journalist, but in this instant, maybe didn't do his homework. It's Michael Friscalanti, for God's sake. Former Macleans.
Yeah, that's right.
What's Editor-in-chief at Village Media. The guy's a big deal, not a small-town journalist.
No, I am a small-town journalist. Proud of it. No. We do great small-town journalism, Scott.
We do. We do, and we do it well. And speaking of which, let's propel ourselves into the first word to Frisco. I love this story.
Speaking of small town.
Speaking of small town, it does not get any better than this. Some llama drama in the Blue Mountains, courtesy of Erica Engel, the editor at Collingwood Today.
Yeah. You know, we often talk about the very serious changing journalism we do, the stuff that has an impact. We do a lot of that stuff, but this is one of those stories that everybody loves. This is Erica's. I know the backstory. Erica Engel, who's never stops working, is going through her Facebook feed on a Sunday, I think it was. And she saw this post about these llamas that had escaped their, whatever you want to call it. What is it? A cage?
I don't know.
Enclosure?
Enclosure.
Wherever they were.
Somebody left the gate open.
Yeah. But, which was, of course, even though it's Sunday, she sprung into action, got the first piece up about these llamas. And you know the story as well as I do because you've spoken to her too for your behind the scenes. But I guess three of them had escaped. They were on the lam. Two L's for what, a couple days, a few days?
Well, it's the story of Luca, Lewis, and Todd, the three llamas
who were,
as you alluded to, on the lam. Two of them, Luca and Todd, got captured and returned safely November 16th.
Okay.
Lewis. Lewis is the problem llama in the whole thing.
Yeah.
Erica says he's the brains of the operation, and he eluded capture for another 4 days.
That's amazing. How were they trying to capture him? Like, were they?
They brought in professional wranglers. I mean, Derek said it best. It's like, it would have been like a scene out of Yellowstone. The cavalry coming out of the mountains with the rope.
That's awesome.
Looking for Lewis the llama.
Lewis the llama. And now they're safely back in their cage.
They are unharmed. No worries for where. They have all been returned safe and sound.
That's a great story. Collingwood Today on top of it all.
Wonderful story. Not so wonderful is the Christmas tree in Orillia. Made me think of Charlie Brown's Christmas tree. And apparently Jimmy Fallon thought the same.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's kind of seen this tree now. It's gone viral. And Orillia, is this the main Christmas tree they light every year? So
That's the main Christmas.
Yeah, I know. And it's a great, because the crowd's gathered, it's dark outside, they're all excited, and they do the countdown, and it lights up, and I guess it was just the trunk that was lit up, right, with the boat.
It was like nine lights
on the tree. Yeah, there was like no reaction. It was like, oh.
But the best reaction, the guy who got the best video, once the tree gets lit up, all you hear is, what the hell?
Exactly.
It was perfect.
It was great. And then, of course, it did make Jimmy Fallon. We've got a good run of our stories making it to the U.S. late night program. First, we got the big zucchini and Thorold making it to Stephen Colbert. And now the Orillia Christmas tree.
And not to mention the giant pumpkin boat.
Yes.
Out of Sault Ste. Marie that got picked up by This Hour Has 22 Minutes.
Yeah. And a crazy twist to that story. I don't know if you saw on Sault today, but one of the lead writers on This Hour Has 22 Minutes is from the Sioux.
Jordan Foisey.
Yeah. Reached out to Alex and said, hey, great job on that story. By the way, I'm from the Sioux.
Yeah.
Who knew? And guess what? We did a story on it.
Now, further irony to that point, Jordan, being from the Sioux, was the one who didn't write the piece.
Yeah,
for the
exactly.
Show.
It's kind of disappointing. Maybe he had a meaner joke that didn't make the
yeah,
cut.
Yeah.
It was a good one, though.
More seriously, back to the shooting which took place a few weeks ago in Sault Ste. Marie. It's still making headlines and just an incredible picture of Brian Sweeney in the background when the prime minister was in town.
Yeah, Ken Armstrong here at Sioux Today, who's been covering a lot of the details about that shooting from the moment it happened, and has done the first stories about Angie Sweeney, who was one of the women, the woman who was killed mm-hmm. in this mass shooting along with three children. And he's done interviews with her father and with her close friends and written beautiful stories about who she was and the type of person she was. And out of those stories has come her dad, Brian's, commitment and a mission, basically, to change the laws around intimate partner violence. He's making it known that he will not stop until the laws are stronger to protect other people from this kind of violence. And after news broke first on Sioux Today that November 11th, that morning, we broke the news that the prime minister was coming.
Right.
He saw the news and said to himself, I have to meet the prime minister.
Mm-hmm.
So the PM's third event of the day, I believe, was at the current Legion Hall, which is in the basement of the Marconi Hall here in the Sioux. And he went down there, waited, and waited for the chance to speak to the prime minister. And Adam Scotty, the prime minister's photographer, actually took a picture of the PM at a table, smiling and talking with people. And you can see Brian in the background against the wall, just waiting for his opportunity to speak to the PM. And he did have a cordial conversation, a chance to meet the prime minister, told him who he was, told him that, you know, that I'm not going to rest until I see some change here. And to his credit, the next day he had a meeting with our local MP, Terry Sheehan, to talk more about the issue. And I have to say, you know, tragically, in a lot of cases like this where we see terrible things happen, there's often family members left behind who want to make a difference. They want to make things better for other people. And we've seen it to varying degrees over the years. But Brian really strikes me as a guy who will not rest until there's some serious discussion about this issue and some serious change. So if I was a lawmaker in this province or in this country, I would not take him lightly. He has a lot to say, and he's definitely not going to stop talking about it.
No, and there was a line in Ken's story, and I may be paraphrasing here, but when Brian introduced himself to the prime minister, he said something to the effect of, I want you to know my name.
That's right.
Because you're going to be hearing a lot of it.
For sure. And I think a lot more people are going to hear his name in the months to come, for sure. And, you know, as Ken also reported, the investigation is still ongoing. The police have told the public that they've seized two weapons, a handgun and a long gun. We don't know any more details about that, what type of weapon they were. We don't know if he had a license to carry. We do know that this shooter was under a gun ban a year before based on another case, but it had expired after he served his probation, just 10 months before the shooting. So lots of unanswered questions about whether this guy had legal access to firearms. Whose were they?
Right.
So, you know, we're waiting for those answers from the police, and I think the public deserves to know those answers, and so we're going to keep on it and report whatever we find.
All right. First word to Frisco. Okay, today on the show, Restaurant Impossible. Dalhousie University recently releasing a study that, quite frankly, when it comes to the restaurant industry, it's alarming, the numbers.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Over 50% of restaurants nationwide are operating in the red.
Yep, for sure. But since the pandemic, a lot have not been able to recover. And the report also goes into detail about how dissatisfied people are with going to restaurants lately, that they're going a lot less, A, because the cost of living has gone up. They don't have enough disposable income to go to restaurants, but also because they're disappointed in the service they're getting and what they're getting for their money, right? The famous term he uses, shrinkflation, that, you know, we're getting less and less food and not as good quality on the plates. So it's kind of paints a real portrait of an industry that's struggling for sure right now.
Absolutely. Okay, Dr. Sylvain Charlebois from Dalhousie University will join us to talk about that study and other things, including inflation and shrinkflation. That's next when Inside the Village returns right after this.
Reporters, editors, and journalists who go the extra mile to get the story and get it right. Go behind the scenes with those who cover the stories that matter most to you and your community. Look for it in the Village Features section of your favorite Village Media website across Ontario.
Welcome back to Inside the Village with Michael Friscoletti, Editor-in-Chief here at Village Media. I'm Scott Sexsmith. Pleased to be joined today on the program by Dr. Sylvain Charlebois, the Director of Agri-Food Analytics Lab at Dalhousie University in my hometown of Halifax, Nova Scotia. Beautiful East Coast.
Great food. I forgot you're from there.
Great food, great restaurants, and we're going to talk to the good doctor about restaurants. Doctor, first of all, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
Well, thank you. I had no idea you came from Halifax.
I'm a Navy brat and lived there many years ago, but was actually just recently back there about a month or so ago.
I learned something new every day.
There you go.
We'll just talk about Scott for the rest of the interview, Doug.
That's right.
Well, Halifax has changed quite a bit. I've been there for 7 years, and it's just a beautiful city. It got even more beautiful in recent years.
The waterfront, the boardwalk is absolutely spectacular. What a great vibe down there.
Yep.
Yeah, very cool.
Absolutely.
Okay, Doctor, you recently wrote an article that started this way. The Canadian restaurant industry, once a thriving and beloved sector of our nation's culture, is facing a severe crisis, one that is as much about survival as it is about maintaining image. Let's start there. What is the crisis?
Well, first of all, according to Restaurants Canada, 51% of its members are actually losing money. And so we all know that the restaurant business is a high-risk business. One restaurant out of five will survive the first 5 years. So we all know that. But it just gotten worse in recent years just because of financial headwinds that the sector is facing. Obviously, COVID didn't help. The cost of food has gone up. Maintain margins has been very difficult. A lot of people think that food service is all about high margins. Not so. Same as retail. Margins are very, very low. So you're always a couple of mistakes away from losing money. And that's kind of what's going on. Of course, we have to add to the pile labor issues, rent. If you're not owning a building, you're on the hook for probably a higher rent. And so that's been the issue. And the other troubling stats that we came up with is the fact that a lot of people are leaving the restaurant experience not being satisfied. Mm-hmm. And only 29% of Canadians actually are satisfied with their experience based on the money spent. But people are spending a lot more money. So what we also find out is that expectations have actually changed also. And that's dangerous. So if you're actually continuously letting people leaving your establishment not being satisfied, you're not going to see them again.
Doctor, when you say not being satisfied with the experience, is that overall or is that specific to one thing, the service, the portion size, or is that the overall experience?
It's the overall experience. Things that people have noticed are portion sizes, of course. We've also noticed that people are seeing food that is not as not of the same quality, and of course, because of the labor shortage, you're consistently training people. And when people are in training, they don't necessarily they're not optimal. And so people are noticing as well. And at the end of the night, when you're given your invoice, your bill, well, you have to add an extra 15, 20, 25% on that for the tip. And so people kind of add things up and say, is this really worth it to actually go out, not being overly satisfied, being overcharged, and then leave and not feeling, you know, not feeling that you got your money's worth.
And in the economic climate we're living in now, people are worried about the cost of so many things. It is kind of easy to say, you know what? I think today we're not going to go out this weekend to a restaurant. I'm sure a lot of people are feeling that way, right, Doctor?
Oh, absolutely. Listen, in retail, things are really, really bad. I mean, I don't want to be the Debbie Downer here, but when you look at the data, gentlemen, right now Canadians are spending less at the grocery store compared to last year, despite food inflation. So last year, the average Canadian, according to StatsCan, the average Canadian was spending $265 a month on food retail. It's down to $255. Mm-hmm. So people are absolutely trading down. They're visiting different stores they haven't visited before, i.e. Giant Tiger, dollar stores, to get food. That's the reality. So do you think food service is a priority now for a lot of people? Likely not.
No, exactly. And because of that, you talk about this 51% of restaurants that are operating at a loss. We're seeing that in real life, right? In our own communities, we see the very popular, maybe some of the older restaurants, the places that have been around a long time, closing their doors. Yeah. It's devastating for people in that way, if not only for the businesses, but for the people who've enjoyed those restaurants over the years. Are you seeing a lot of, are you hearing from people? Are restaurant owners reaching out to you because they see your expertise?
Well, we talk to Restaurants Canada mm-hmm. all the time, probably once a month. In fact, the president and CEO will be on our podcast in about a month from now, I guess. We've had people from Restaurants Canada coming to on our show on a regular basis, but they need our help. But here's the thing about Restaurants Canada. It's a tough organization. They represent everyone, mm-hmm. like fast food, bars, mm-hmm. taverns, mm-hmm. Fine dining, casual dining. They all have different needs. Now, when you look at the restaurant landscape right now, I would say I wouldn't be too worried about the McDonald's and the RBIs of this world. Mm-hmm. They're doing fine. Look at their financial statements. They're doing very well, in mm-hmm. fact, in a trading down economy. What I'm worried about are independent operators. They're the ones really, they're the real innovators, but they're also the ones feeling the real pressures right now.
Doctor, we hear the term quite frequently now, shrinkflation. Can you explain that to our audience and what that term means?
The most annoying term of 2023, I guess. I mean, shrinkflation is de facto a strategy. It is to retain market share by reducing portion sizes, reducing costs, but not adjusting the price. So as a consumer, you're basically getting less for the same price. I think a lot of people have actually noticed that some of their products have actually been shrinkflated. We believe that in 2023, about 20 products were shrinkflated. Very, very well-known products. But other than that, I mean, over the years, we've seen hundreds of products being impacted by the strategy. It's not new, but it's annoying for a lot of people just because of this food inflation storm we're in. People are looking for anything and everything. And there's also skimpflation, the quality of the food. That's another inflation, tideflation, greedflation, you name it. There's inflation. There's a new inflation every month.
That's a great line. Well, speaking of newflations, what this the thing that everyone's been talking about for months, just the sticker shock at the grocery store. Do you see any relief at all in sight, Doctor, for the average person at the grocery store in the months to come?
Well, I can make a prediction about shrinkflation for sure. I mean, we tend to see more cases when commodity prices go up. Mm-hmm. When input costs go up, manufacturers adjust, mm-hmm. and that's how they adjust. Now, what we're looking at right now is a market where commodity prices are actually depressed compared to last year. Last year's Ukrainian effect, the invasion of Ukraine, really got pushed most commodity prices much higher. For example, a bushel of wheat was at $13, which is a record. Mm-hmm. Now it's down to about $6. So I wouldn't worry too much about shrinkflation for 2024, except for perhaps chocolate. If you like chocolate, go out and buy now, gentlemen.
Because cocoa, got it.
Cocoa futures is at a 44-year high, and sugar also is quite expensive right now.
Really? I hadn't heard that. Why? What's driving that?
Sugar is basically sugar canes. Down south, production has been subpar. Cocoa, same thing in the Ivory Coast and also in New Guinea. Those are countries that do produce a lot of cocoa, and production hasn't been efficient or effective. So that's why we're paying more. That's basically it. And all of these elements are due to climate changing.
Mm-hmm. We know you're a busy man, so we won't keep you much longer. Just a couple more questions. Just to touch again on the survey that your lab did, you surveyed more than 5,500 Canadians. What other things from that research stuck out to you?
It's the other thing that really kind of surprised me is that there is hope for restaurant operators, I think, and that boils down to loyalty. Mm. If you actually get together, if you work together with other independents, and I'm talking about independents here, if you get together and create some sort of passport or give gift certificates to people. They will reward you back if you actually give them an incentive. That's the one thing that came up quite a lot. So you can disappoint them. It can be tough for you. The economic environment may be very difficult for you, but there is hope. You can actually get people back. And right now, we're into the holiday season, basically. And so a lot of people are organizing parties. And the one thing they'll be looking at are menu prices before anything else.
Doctor, before we let you go, a quick question, and it's a bit of a personal one. Have you found that your dining out habits have changed at all recently?
Well, I travel a lot. I'm very acquainted with the Maple Leaf Lounge. So if you count that, well, I guess I haven't changed my habits. But I mean, we are careful. I mean, we're a family, and like everyone else, we feel the brunt of food inflation. So we're very careful. We're blessed with the fact that we don't have a heavy mortgage to carry, and so we've been lucky in that regards. But we do volunteer quite a bit at our food bank in Nova Scotia, Feed Nova Scotia. In fact, this weekend we were doing the Santa Claus Parade volunteering, and I'm on the board of Second Harvest in Toronto, the largest food bank in Canada. So I give back in that way because I know a lot of people are suffering right now.
All right, Dr. Sylvain Charlebois, currently in BC. Safe travels back to the East Coast, and thanks for doing this today.
Take care. Bye-bye.
For the latest in in-depth features and enterprise journalism from your local writers at Village Media, be sure to check out The Big Read. The Big Read. It's the full story behind the headlines. Look for The Big Read on your favorite Village Media website across Ontario.
Back to wrap on Inside the Village for the week of November the 23rd, 2023. Sylvain Charlebois, great discussion. He's not big on that term shrinkflation, but Derek brought up a good point too during the commercial break. Pot of Gold, remember those?
Yeah, the chocolates?
Yeah, Toronto Sun, Derek. Toronto Sun has just ran a story today, in fact, that shows how the package is the same size, but they've gone from 24 pieces to 12.
They didn't even try to hide it. They basically slashed in half.
Yeah.
Well, what about even, not that I eat my kids' Halloween candy. Okay, I do. The bags of chips. Like there's like three chips.
It's crazy.
You have to open like 40 bags of chips to get like a decent bowl of chips.
Yeah.
Like, so, I mean, it's like they're counting the chips going in that bag.
I know. It's been like that in the grocery stores for a while though, right? You get the big bag of Lay's.
Yeah.
Half of it is there.
Yeah. It's true. Someone needs to do a story on that.
They should. You know anyone?
What's that?
Do you know anyone?
No, we gotta get on that.
I may know a small town journalist that could probably. No. All right.
It's gonna be on my business card.
So, quick question, and either one of you can chime in. Has your dining out habits changed post COVID?
You know, we don't dine out a lot, to be honest. We do eat at home a lot of a lot. So I don't think it's changed. I think we're probably going out the rare time.
Yeah.
It's usually if everyone has a bunch of hockey events going on,
sure,
to go and eat something. I'm trying to think if I've been disappointed lately in a restaurant. I don't think I have. But I do know people in the restaurant industry, and they've sort of talked anecdotally about just how much more difficult it is to run a restaurant too. They're dealing with skyrocketing prices as well, right?
Yep.
They're dealing with huge staff turnover all the time. Like they hire people, they can't keep them. And so those pressures are on them. How about you?
Not really. Like you, we don't go out a ton. So it's had very little impact on us. And quite frankly, I haven't noticed much of a difference when it comes to shrinkflation. But I guess it's, you know, due in large part to the fact that we don't go out a lot. Derek, you notice?
No, I haven't noticed it too much.
Yeah.
We don't eat out a lot either, though, so.
It's interesting too what he talked about, how the Restaurant Industry Association represents everybody from like McDonald's to like the small mom and pop shop who are kind of at opposite ends of the spectrum, I would think, right? They're at different things. So, and I think he mentioned it too, that, you know, the places like McDonald's are going to keep doing well, like they always do, right? It's the smaller, you know, independent guys that are in some trouble.
Absolutely. Okay. Tell us what you think about shrinkflation, inflation at ITV at Village Media. .ca. And of course, watch all back episodes across the Village Media Network or wherever you get your favorite podcast. For Derek Turner, executive producer of the show, Michael Friscolanti, editor-in-chief, I'm Scott Sexsmith. We'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Inside the Village.
Frisco and Scott's wardrobe provided in part by Moores, Sault Ste. Marie.